Ladies and gentlemen, would you welcome to our humble stage here at What Do You Know, the Honorable Senator from the state of Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin. The great state of Wisconsin and the great Honorable Senator Tammy Baldwin. How are you? Tammy Baldwin, you're a senator. I'm sorry. Senator Baldwin.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you? Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah. How was that speech there, the State of the Union? Did you enjoy that or not?
Well, there's always a grand moment when we all gather together and the Supreme Court and the cabinet and both houses. But I have an observation. You know who led the round of applause when the president said this was his last election?
No.
Michelle Obama. I kid you not.
Yeah. And the kids had their earphones on listening to Beyonce, right? And so they didn't even notice the line at all whatsoever. Is that true, actually? Did she?
It is actually true. I was sitting in a seat that I could see her in the gallery, and she was the first one applauding.
Yeah. Well, they must have planned that then, and he could use that laugh line then after that, and he won them both. That was pretty good. Good comeback. So do you have an exploratory committee out? Are you running for any other offices?
I am
got some feelers out there?
I am very happy and very privileged to be doing what I get to do.
Yes. But I don't mean to disparage that remark. I know it's true, as a matter of fact, but that's what Scotty Walker said. He wanted to be governor. I had no idea he had higher ambitions, you know. I would have voted for him for president if it would get him out of here, you know. I think the country deserves that. We don't. We're Wisconsin. Okay, so you're not thinking about that.
I'm not thinking about that.
But is it good? Now, excuse me, now you don't have to. You win in the House, take maybe a week off, and you start campaigning for the next election. You got like a year there, right?
That's right. The two-year cycle is a great challenge, and I have to say, looking at 6 years is very different, especially in terms of being able to plan for a real agenda, and that's what we've been doing, and it's very exciting to be there fighting for Wisconsin and fighting for economic growth and fighting for an economy that allows everybody to benefit.
Yeah. But this implies you did not have an agenda when you were in the House. Is that? Or did you just haphazardly come up with things? And...
Well, you know, we did work on a health bill when I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd that go? Pretty good?
Well, the Affordable Care Act has increased the health care coverage for almost 11 million Americans, and we're keeping on going and trying to work out the kinks. But
can you talk to your friend Ron Johnson about this? He doesn't seem to agree with that assessment.
Well,
he's hurt. He was hurt by it. He said. I don't know if he meant personally or emotionally
it was,
hurt.
It was interesting because he took his complaints to another branch of government, and he's actually sitting in a branch where we can have debates on how to make it work.
Did you let him know that? Probably wonders what that S-E-N period means in front of his name. I don't want to. I know. It's collegial, though. Is it more collegial in the Senate than it is in the House?
It is.
It is.
You know, I think part of it is just fewer people. It's a little more challenging to really get to know 434 others.
Yeah.
And in the Senate, you really do get to know your colleagues.
Plus, the facilities are a lot nicer. You know, they got health clubs and saunas and workout rooms, right? Am I right?
I do understand those exist.
You haven't used any of them?
You know, I will admit I have paid a monthly membership to the Senate gym, and I haven't worked out. I have not.
I'm assuming at this point in history they have both male and female locker rooms. In the Senate used to be.
That is true.
Because I don't think Margaret Chase Smith worked out, as I recall.
I was going to say, that is true, although it is my understanding that on the House side in particular, there's huge inequities between the facilities.
Really?
Yeah. Because
it was... Do you care to elaborate on those inequities?
Well, the house, the buildings in the house were constructed at a time where there were very, very few, if any, female members of the House of Representatives. And the facilities that exist in the Senate were built at a much later period in time when there were members of... there were members who were women and men.
Yeah. Well, now you know how we feel in theaters when women have these luxurious restrooms with couches. And I think there's valet parking to get into the restroom. I don't know what it is.
Well, there was
just a little...
Yeah, there was a big story about the bathroom facilities in the Senate. Because last session in the 113th Congress, we hit a record number of women in the Senate at 20. And we still have 20 even after the elections. And there were traffic jams. There were traffic jams in the women's restroom off the Senate floor, and they've improved the circumstances there.
Can you vote from a restroom if you have to?
No.
Oh. Ted Cruz and you.
Oh, yes.
What is this?
I've been receiving a lot of gifts from Ted Cruz recently.
What is happening here?
Well, first, it's not an ancient tradition in the Senate, but it's a fairly recent tradition of Secret Santas right before Christmas. And we pull names.
Just your luck, you got Ted Cruz for a Secret Santa.
He got me.
Oh, he got you.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good then.
Yeah. So, and then he leaked it to social media that he had me in. And so I got this great Texas cookbook that I am eager to try out in the near future.
Is it roadkill? One of those roadkill cookbooks? Ted Cruz roadkill cookbook.
It's called Texas Eats.
Yeah, that's it. You kill them on the road and you throw them under the engine. They're around the end. You cook them right on the manifold as you drive. By the time you get to your destination, and dinner is served.
I'll copy you that recipe if I find it in the book. But that wasn't the end of gift giving from Ted Cruz, because we put a little wager on the Packers Cowboys game.
Okay, that one was good.
And he had to pay up.
Yeah. You didn't bet on the other one we don't talk about, do you? Did you?
I did.
Did you? What'd you lose?
Well, some Spotted Cow beer, some Sprecher root beer, and some Renard's cheese curds.
Okay. Well, we all paid the price on that one, I guess. So, your old pal, though, Speaker Boehner, said, he didn't say what I said that he said, but he said that he was... He's kind of coming on, like, he said people think he's squishy. Wasn't it squishy? Wasn't that the word he used? And his bartender tried to poison his beer. I mean, you know, what's happening with I mean, you know John Boehner.
And I do.
He's a decent individual and so forth, and trying, you know, the best he can. And now he said the Tea Party is just, he's tired of them just beating the dickens out of me to raise money. So they use him as the boy to raise money over. So
yeah, and it was kind of a tight vote for his speakership this year too.
Yeah, so it could have been. But you have no comments on John Boehner.
Well, I have to say, you know, I don't see him as much as I used to when I served in the House. Yeah. But in my freshman term, our offices were right across the hall from one another before he got his special office in the Capitol when he became Speaker. So
he's a decent fellow.
We would have lovely conversations.
Lovely. He didn't give you any cookbooks or anything, right?
No, I didn't ever get any of Ohio's best.
Yeah. President Obama, so instead of going to Iowa, where he would be going ordinarily at this time, he goes to India. So that means it's official. He's definitely not running again.
I think that's right.
Yeah, unless he's running in India, which is a possible thing. Now, big change in power, of course. There. Did you lose your office? Because you got a pretty good office, I think.
No, I didn't lose my office. Yeah. You know, they go through a draw, but, you know, 2 years ago when I was visiting here and talking with you, we were in our temporary quarters, and so we finally moved from temporary to... We were in a trailer 2 years ago, and now we're in our office, and we get to stay. There's been some other changes.
Did you keep it, though? They didn't move? Did it with a lot of shuffling?
Well, certainly there were a number of members who retired, and their offices are now empty, and people are bidding for them. And, yeah. and so my chance to look at another office will come in the spring. I don't know. We have no idea whether whether we'll stay, but I'm very happy.
It's kind of important.
In terms of office space.
Yes. If you put you somewhere where the lobbyists can't find you, what are you going to do? You know? Are lobbyists allowed to actually enter office areas, or do they have to stay in the lobby? Is that why they're called? I've never understood. How does that work?
Well, you know, actually, if I understand the origins of the term lobbyist, it was actually the lobby of a hotel where members of Congress were known to hang out. I think it was the lobby of the Willard Hotel, if my history serves me correctly. And that's where the term came from. But we try to be very, very accessible in Washington, D.C., and our office on the 7th floor of the Hart Office Building, we have a constituent coffees on Thursday mornings. We like people to come in and visit, and we don't like to have barriers. And we have a Kringle that we serve at our constituent coffees, and also always have a bowl full of craisins, another great Wisconsin product.
Do you?
From
curds?
The
Any
Marshfield
curds?
Area.
Marshfield, yeah. He's there. Any curds? Cheese curds, did you say?
You know, they don't keep as well in an open bowl.
Yeah.
But
we don't care.
But as you know, we promote them when we can.
When we can, yes. So now there is a thing in this Keystone pipeline thing. So that seems to be the number one on the agenda.
Oh, it sure is. It's occupied last week and this week and probably next week.
Yeah. There's a headline in the LA Times said, Keystone XL amendments had senators doing the unusual voting. A lot. So repeated votes. And I guess you could not even speak to your, if you had an amendment on there, you could not get the floor to explain what your amendment meant.
Thursday night was quite dramatic in that regard. There were a number of my colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle who had offered amendments to the Keystone bill, and one by one they were tabled, and the authors of the amendments sought recognition and said, we want to at least make our case for the amendment, and they were not allowed to do that. That was too bad.
Ed Markey from Massachusetts, Senator Markey.
Tried to get the attention of the President of the Senate, who the presiding officer. And
and who is that these days?
Well, it varies. They rotate people through.
Yeah.
So
too much for one guy to put all these.
Yeah, they give them about an hour or 2 hour stint, and then they give them a little relief.
Yeah, but it's sort of, but Mitch McConnell is sort of the head of all that, right, in terms of who's recognized or who or what comes on to the floor.
No, the presiding officer actually decides who's recognized, usually by the first person that they hear, unless it's one of the leaders, and then the rules of presiding are that you're supposed to defer to one of the two party leaders.
And this is exactly the kind of thing that did not happen when the Democrats were in charge. Can we say that? Or?
Absolutely. No. Absolutely. You can say that. And I'll agree with
you.
But
would I be right?
You would be right. You would indeed be right.
Okay. I thought that was interesting. I guess the burning question is, where do you stand on deflated footballs?
Well, it's pretty horrifying. It seems like... I had to... first of all, get a little lesson on why it would help, but I guess it would assist somebody in especially adverse weather conditions in gripping the football.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and so we're staying tuned. This is
is it a matter of congressional relevance?
Well, let's say that football is an oft-discussed topic among members of Congress.
Yeah,
we're all very proud of our teams, and so I. You know, it hasn't gotten onto the official agenda yet of any committees, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But certainly it's talked about.
Yeah. Do you have your committee assignments changed as well because of the new leadership? And
Not so much because of the new leadership, but because of slowly advancing seniority. And I just newly was appointed to the Senate Appropriations Committee.
Well, congratulations. That's great. That's a good place for you. And who chairs that committee?
That is chaired by Tad Cochran.
Tad Cochran. He's from?
He is from Mississippi.
Mississippi, that's right. Tad Cochran from Mississippi. Okay. Well, good luck with that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that should be interesting. And Ron Johnson, Senator Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. He rhymes with Wisconsin. That's a good thing. Is on Homeland Security.
Yes, he's now chairing the committee, and I'm on that committee with him.
Oh, you are?
I am, yes.
Okay. Well, then it's not as scary as it sounded originally when I heard it. He'll be there with a world map or something, you know, just... Okay. What does that committee do exactly? What is their goal?
Well, originally, the committee, the full title of the committee is Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, and it used to be really a committee that dealt with our domestic agencies. And then when the Homeland Security Department was created in recent years, pretty much following 9/11, that was the major oversight committee for Homeland Security in addition to the other responsibilities. And so it was pretty broad jurisdiction, and Homeland Security is certainly key. And we have some real special responsibilities right now because, and not to get too much in the weeds, but when we passed the appropriations bill for the 2015 fiscal year, because of President Obama's directives on immigration, they only funded the Homeland Security Department through the end of February. And so we have some really urgent work to do.
So as of March, we have no Homeland Security.
If we don't act soon. And we need to really take politics out of that process because obviously it's a very important department.
Yeah. And I know the cybersecurity, does that come up under that as well?
It does. And we hope we'll get to that very expediently because it's in the news everywhere, and people are very concerned, you know, at the personal level about theft of their identity, and certainly at the macro level about intellectual property and privacy.
Yeah, there's a guy, I think it might have been in Green Bay, who said that his ex-wife had stolen his identity. But I mean, that happened. That's what marriage is all about, you know. I mean, what But I know what you mean. That's possible. If a stranger steals your identity, it's a much different situation.
Absolutely, and we've been seeing it happen in these massive data breaches, and people have reason to be concerned. It's a huge, issue.
Yeah, never ending as well, it seems. And what other committees are you on now? You're on Homeland Security.
Homeland Security.
Appropriations, which is a good one, right?
That's appropriations. I'm very excited about getting working on that committee. I'm also on the Budget Committee.
Budget is important.
And the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. So to help you remember that, there's an acronym.
Yes.
The HELP Committee. Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions.
Somebody worked on that many hours.
Senator Ted Kennedy was the longtime chair of that committee.
Oh, that's really something. That's really cool. And is there any sense of there's better camaraderie, you know, individually and so forth, but of some actually across the aisle, cooperation on issues or?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. We had our first hearing in the HELP committee this week on K-12 education and. Feel like there was a good bipartisan discussion, and we hope that there's going to be opportunities to move things forward, especially with regard to education, which is so important as, the primary vehicle for opportunity for all in our country.
Yeah. Were there some opposed to K-12 education?
To be frank, there are certainly those who
K-6. That's it.
Who don't think there should be a federal role, and instead of looking at how can we all work together at all levels with strong local controls and state involvement and federal involvement in particular to make sure that there's equity throughout this nation, and no matter what a child's zip code, that they are able to. Achieve and have the opportunities.
Yeah. there is this whole thing, what is it, the core values, what do they call it in education, the core...
Curriculum? No.
Well, you know, the core, the things that kids should learn in school.
Yeah, Common Core?
Common Core, that's what it is. And that's a big, there's a big dividing line there, right?
There is. It is more a debate at the states, as the states have elected to adopt Common Core in the course of getting waivers from the old No Child Left Behind legislation. And actually, that was the subject of our hearing, was how do we reauthorize our national Elementary and Secondary Education Act and fix the very significant flaws of No Child Left Behind, and again, making sure that a child anywhere in the United States, anywhere in Wisconsin, has the opportunities that a high-quality education can provide.
Mm-hmm. And No Child Left Behind, is that Common Core replaced that?
Is that the other way around. Common Core is something that many of the states have adopted to, in order to get waivers from the penalizing elements of No Child Left Behind.
So that's still in effect, that series of laws, No Child Left Behind?
They are, but many states have been granted waivers from their most punitive provisions.
So some states are allowed to leave some kids behind. you know the ones I mean.
Well, that's the concern of why we need a federal role in education, so that that doesn't happen anywhere.
Yeah. And are you sponsoring legislation yourself, or can we not talk about that yet, or is that too soon to say?
There's a lot of areas in education where I'm introducing, either have or will be introducing education-related legislation. Mm-hmm. Right now, one of the big debates is about testing. How often we should test children, whether there should be a yearly test at the federal that's mandated by the federal level. And so one of the things that I'm looking at with colleagues is all the tests that students are subject to and what sort of demands that places on teachers that take them away from their other instruction. In terms of allowing folks to actually understand what's mandated at the local level, what's mandated at the state level, what actually comes from federal directives. And, we want to have teachers have and parents and students have the tools they need to make sure their child is growing every year. But we also want to avoid the huge criticisms of No Child Left Behind, of teaching to the test and having that take up too much of teacher time. And also, especially the fact that the way No Child Left Behind was put together, schools were unduly penalized for failing to make certain average yearly progress. And that became a huge impediment from which states have gotten waivers, and that's why they've adopted these other reforms, including some of them having chosen to adopt the Common Core.
Yeah. And this community college thing that the president mentioned, can that actually happen, something along those lines?
I certainly hope so. I think that this is such an important piece that really focuses on so many of the challenges. First of all, we've had huge exposure of the gripping debt that so many students are under. A higher education is far more inaccessible these days, and student debt has eclipsed credit card debt in America in recent years.
And a lot of this, I might add, is actually parental debt, but that's
it true. Is. It is. No, that's a very true statement.
I'm not saying it's me necessarily.
Oh well, maybe.
It's called student debt.
Yeah, right.
It's
right.
Certainly true. It's amazing. The numbers are
families
amazing.
Are burdened by this. Yeah. Is a, probably a better way to say that. But it also really focuses in on the upheavals that we've seen since the Great Recession in terms of job loss and people in mid-career recognizing that they need to go back to technical college and retool in order to have a job that can support their families. And, you know, if you visit any technical college in Wisconsin, you're going to see a student body that is of all ages, and very different than what your stereotype might be. And to make that accessible lifelong is incredibly important to grow our economy and make sure that we have an economy that works for everybody, that lifts everyone. It gives everyone an opportunity for prosperity and the American dream. And so I think this community college proposal really goes squarely to address both of those huge issues that we're facing in the United States right now. And we have a ways to go to figure out how to effectuate it, but I can tell you it was one of the most exciting things that I heard out of the president in the lead-up to the State of the Union.
Yeah. Free college, though, that's socialism.
I think about Wisconsin in particular. Yeah. We put the right to a free public education for all of our children in our Constitution. Mm-hmm. And I want to see new life breathed into those historic commitments.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great idea. How are the, you must be assaulted now by a whole new brand of lobbyists. And so, I mean, there's a lot of pressures on a senator and a lot of people you can't get away from and hear from. Is it strikingly different from the House side of things?
There's only still 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
And so in terms of my use of time when I'm in Washington, it's certainly visiting and welcoming the constituents from Wisconsin who come out to talk about the issues that families here face. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of committee work.
But, if they're from the Chamber of Commerce or something.
From the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, or are they from Wisconsin coming here?
If they're from
the
West Bend Chamber of Commerce, I can see that. But you know what I mean. These sort of all these masses, the pharmaceuticals, and all these people. I mean, it's a different game in the Senate, right, than in the House.
Well,
as far as all those pressures coming at you all the time, and
I certainly think there's a big change when you go from representing a district to representing a whole state, and I embrace those changes. This is an incredible state that I've had the opportunity to be born and raised in. And, we respond to those by focusing on our constituents who come to visit and who request my time. And when I'm here in the state, that's how I spend my time. And so there may be numerically more lobbyists who register to work with the Senate than the House. I don't even know if that's the case. But it really doesn't affect my schedule on a day-to-day basis. I'm just doing my job.
Yes. And this golden gavel doesn't hurt either, does it? Did you receive the golden gavel?
I have received one for my first year in the Senate, and I understand...
Is there a cash prize with that? Or is it just...
I don't know what the golden gavel itself would be worth if I put it on eBay, if that's what you're asking.
Is it actually gold, or is it actually a gavel?
It is, and it's kind of heavy. It's small. It's about this size of a gavel, and it comes in a lovely presentation box. Yeah. And when I received... Should I maybe say what the golden gavel is? So when I was in the majority in my first 2 years in the Senate, one of the things we do, especially the new members, the freshman members, is preside over the Senate. And I presided quite a lot. I really loved it because it really gave me an opportunity.
Like presiding, but you don't have an exploratory committee?
That's correct. That's correct. And I like the fact that when I am presiding, they have to refer to me as Madam President.
Noted.
To be recognized. But anyways, there's an old tradition, I think, that started in the 60s, that anyone who presided more than 100 hours in a year was presented with a golden gavel. And I got over 100 hours, regrettably, during the government shutdown, when there were a couple of filibusters being led by, maybe the golden gavel is the first gift that Ted Cruz ever gave me, if you think about it. Because I remember hours in the a.m., that early a.m., that I was sitting there while he was doing his filibuster. But that got me over the 100 hours in the first. And so
how
I was presented.
I was even a filibuster. He went to Harvard, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. Pretty good filibuster-er. Did he stay with the content? Could he follow through on...
Well, I wasn't there when he read the Dr. Seuss story to his kids. When I was presiding at that particular dark moment in our country's history, because the government was closed, and it was a very sad chapter in my mind. But he was indeed talking about the Affordable Care Act, which is what he was filibustering about mainly. But in any event. Last year, I also got a golden gavel, and so I think that the two-time award is rare. And I,
do you have two of them, or did you just give the same one?
The second one has not yet been presented, but I did earn it.
Yeah, and it means 100 hours.
100 hours in the chair.
Yeah, okay. Are you going to get one, you think?
I'm told.
It's like Michelin stars or something. You
we have. One can't earn one in the minority because it is the responsibility of the majority party to assign the presiding officers.
So that's it, huh?
Well, there's 6 years to the term, and there's another election in 2016, and we just don't know.
Senator, I want to thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to see you, and you're doing so well. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. And happy anniversary. This is so exciting.
30 years and no gavels, nothing. Nothing. Not allowed to go. Senator Tammy Baldwin, ladies and gentlemen, the great state of Wisconsin. Thank you so much. Senator Baldwin.